Just so you know, you're going to be recording.
I didn't realize it was only
Okay, I think we're ready to start. I'm Karen Minyard, and I'm the director of the Georgia Health Policy Center and the principal investigator for the Public Health Institute's assessments project that we've recently completed. I'm also have the honor of being on the board of NNPHI, and I'm introducing you to this session today. And we have four of us who are going to share different types of information with you. We're going to talk a little bit about the background of NNPHI and the Public Health Institutes, and then a little bit about the findings from the assessment project, and then we have two stories from the field. And I'd like to go ahead and introduce the folks that are going to be speaking. First is Aaron. Gosh, Aaron. Aaron got married in her name. I'm having a hard time converting to her new Marsali name. At NNPHI, and she is the director of the Fostering Emerging Institutes Project and has been instrumental in for several years in helping to build new public health institutes. We also have Earl Fox, who comes to us from Florida. He has most recently, the founding director of the Florida Public Health Institute, but he has a long and distinguished career in public health. And I was kind of teasing with him this morning because one of the measures of an entrepreneurial leader is lifelong commitment to a vision. And he has had a lifelong commitment to issues of public health, and he's been at the national, state, and federal levels in public health. He's been in and out of government and in and out of academia and has had a lot of different roles. He headed up HRSA at one point. He's currently on the faculty at least two institutions in Florida, and he's going to tell a little bit about the Florida Public Health Institute and how it got started. We also have with us Hope Rollins, who is the Director of Education and Training at the Michigan Public Health Institute. She's worked there since 1999 in many different roles, and before that, she worked at Henry Ford and health system in Detroit, Michigan, and she had many roles there also. Currently, she is Director of Education and Training at the Michigan Public Health Institute, and she oversees staff grantsmanship, curriculum, the initiatives marketing and promotion initiatives, and has spent 9 years working with the Michigan Department of Community Health. She's going to tell us a little bit about some of the new strategic directions of the Michigan Public Health Institute. So I'm happy to welcome you here, and we're going to kind of go through these three different areas. Aaron's going to start, and then I'll tell you a little bit about the findings.
Thanks, Karen. I'm going to share a little bit about the background and history of NNPHI with you and then talk a bit about what public health institutes are and describe some of their attributes and capacities, as well as talk a little bit about how the network supports institutes. So a little bit of background. NNPHI was established to enhance the capacity of the nation's public health institutes. Our vision is fostering innovations in health, and our mission is to promote multi-sector activities resulting in measurable improvements in public health structures, systems, and outcomes. And when we think about and talk about what we mean by multi-sector, we often refer to this Institute of Medicine diagram, which kind of shows how there are very many sectors that influence the conditions for population health. So we're not talking just about governmental public health and the healthcare delivery system, although these are key components. We also think about business and the media and academia, and institutes use this as core to how they do business and advancing the mission of population health. I'll give you a little bit of history on NMPHI. We were formed in 2001, right about the time that the Turning Point Initiative was underway through the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and this sort of started a national dialogue on how do we advance health systems improvement. So as these conversations were underway, many of the public health institutes came together to say, we need a national organization that represents the work we do. And so NNPHI entered into a cooperative agreement with CDC at this time. In 2003, we were funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to work specifically with emerging institutes. And I'll talk a little bit about more about the evolution of that project later. And through 2004 to 2007, we saw some rapid growth within the national network. We were funded to do some programmatic activities with the National Public Health Performance Standards Program. And we also had some funding to do collaborative work across multiple states and multiple institutes in bioterrorism and accreditation. We also saw marked increases in our cooperative agreement with the CDC. And last year, our board underwent some strategic planning discussions, which has created three key strategic directions that are driving our organization forward in the next few years. So I'll give you a little bit about a background about what public health institutes are, and to give you a really basic definition. Public health institutes are organizations that work collaboratively with multi-sector partners to improve the public's health. And I'll talk a little bit about the growth of these institutes and some of their attributes and capacities to give you a sense of what we mean by that. This map kind of shows you the spread and scope of our nation's public health institutes. We have about 27 members currently. Many of them are statewide in scope. Some of them are focused in a municipal or city area, and some of them are based within universities. We also have affiliate organizations that align with the mission and vision of NNPHI, and we have some provisional members who are growing and developing at this time. We saw some rapid growth among this public health institute movement in the 1990s and the earlier part of this decade. And as I mentioned before, some of this can be attributed to those early turning point conversations, created some of these neutral, nimble, independent organizations to advance that health systems conversation. And we've seen continued growth, especially through the work of the Emerging Institutes Project, in identifying these organizations across the nation. Institutes work in a very special and unique way within their state, and these are some of the attributes that we've put together that kind of give you an example of how they work. Many of our institutes complement governmental public health systems. This is critical and core to the way many of institutes work. They have representation on their boards of governmental public health. They conduct projects and hire staff on behalf of governmental public health. They see them as a key partner to the work that they do in advancing the population health agenda. Institutes have a unique role in their ability to convene multi-sector partners because many of them are independent 501c3 organizations. They sit outside and are able to bring together some partners to the table who may not otherwise be able to work together. Institutes are committed to the concept of health transformation and health systems reform, and they are at the forefront of the dialogue nationally on how we advance health systems change. They're a source of reliable health information. Many institutes work in the areas of data translation and creating evidence-based information for decision-making. And they're nimble and able to work quickly and maneuver to leverage new resources in the state. Institutes work in a variety of areas in public health, some of the most critical and emerging issues in public health today. And no matter what they work in, obesity, tobacco, access to care, health disparities, there's a set of core capacities that institutes have developed over time to address any of those critical issues. Many of the institutes work in population-based health programming. They have health policy development, and they work on the forefront of policy and advocacy in their state. They do training and technical assistance, not just on public health program implementation, but also in helping other organizations develop these kind of capacities. They do research and evaluation work on a number of public health initiatives and work in health informatics, helping to build the infrastructure within communities around supporting health information exchange and technology. They're fiscally and administratively sound, and they have a strong track record in management of grants and contracts. And then many of them are involved in social marketing and health communications activities. NNPHI supports the work of institutes in a number of ways. We have a set of membership services that we offer through topical teleconferences and newsletters. We also have an annual conference every year in May that we host in New Orleans. We also have the Emerging Institutes Project, which I'll expand upon in a moment. And we also work to find ways to bring institutes together to work on a project of mutual interest. So we have ability at the national level to leverage some of the resources that we see and initiatives from our national partners to help advance the work of public health institutes. The Fostering Emerging Institutes Project got started in 2003 with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and it was really just an early exploration of how can we help develop these unique organizations. And we started by doing some very basic educational teleconferences and created an online file library for institutes to use. And we created a guide for developing public health institutes, which has a lot of basic information on developing a 501c3 and how to strategically link partnerships to grow your organization. In our second phase, we've really expanded the work that we've done from the first phase. And part of the work that we've done is to create a Keys to Success assessment tool, which is one of the handouts that you have today, which is based on the characteristics and roles of successful public health institutes that we've learned through our conversations with the board. We've also worked hard to form a learning community among our emerging institutes through the creation of a sustainability curriculum. And one of the more exciting, what I feel is one of the more exciting activities of this project, is that we've created a relationship-based technical assistance program which links leaders of established institutes with the leaders of emerging ones to talk about some of those nitty-gritty organizational development needs that each emerging institute has. And that's really created a very vibrant sharing community among institute leaders. We have several measures of success for our project. One of the big ones that we found is key to the success of these unique organizations is encouraging entrepreneurial leadership and grow and finding ways to enhance the abilities of our leaders on that. We're also working to enhance the sustainability of emerging institutes through helping them demonstrate value to their partners and to think about funding diversification. And as I mentioned before, through the mentoring work that we do, we have some very in-depth conversations on how to grow organizational and programmatic capacity. And lastly, we're working on this concept of measures of success for organizations that are very unique. So to share a little bit about the keys to success, this is a tool that measures 28 indicators of organizational sustainability, and includes things like leadership, communications, infrastructure, and funding. And this is our preliminary step at trying to assess where the institutes are and get a sense for how they're developing. And what we've learned over the course of this second phase of emerging institutes is that we've seen some very rapid growth among our grantees in the areas of board development, increases in funding, improved internal processes. And so it's given us a good first step at looking at what sort of measurements we want to consider as we advance this work. And the work that we've done with this assessment tool has really informed the Public Health Institute assessment project that Karen will go ahead and share with us now.
So the NNPHI board wanted to think about how do we have more institutes, how do we have stronger institutes, and there was a lot of conversation on the board of should we be trying to make the public health institutes that exist stronger Or should we be trying to build more institutes in states where they don't exist? And we felt like as a board that we didn't have enough information to make a decision about how to proceed and what would be the best way to move forward. And so we decided to do this Public Health Institute assessment to learn about the public health institutes that exist and to think about what might be next as it relates to this growth. And so we started out with this kind of vision from our funders that we might have public health institutes or similar kinds of entities in every state. And the CDC funded the NMPHI to do this assessment. And the Health Policy Center was the subcontractor to actually guide the assessment. And we wanted to look at the public health institute's needs. We had this idea in the beginning, which I think is probably still true, although not to the degree that we thought it was. We thought, well, we can get the older public health institutes to help the newer ones, and we can create this virtual technical assistance program that helps develop programmatic and organizational capacity. And we wanted to explore the states without public health institutes and then make recommendations back to the board. And we did this study this year between February and July. I got a lot of frequent flyer miles. It still doesn't give me any kind of an upgrade, but I was 40th on the list coming out here. But anyway, I did a lot of traveling. And we did this in close collaboration with the NMPHI staff and an advisory group. So Aaron and other folks at the NMPHI were just involved with us at every step of the way, were present with us in planning meetings, and went with us on all of the site visits. We used information about the public health institutes from surveys that they had completed in the past, some of their applications to be emerging institutes, information from their websites about their programs, and then we did the visits and the telephone interviews. We started by using the keys to success that you see in that, and we did an informal measure of all the public health institutes according to those keys to success, and we put them into 6 tiers as a way to start. And we used those 6 tiers as kind of our way to sample the institutes for our study. As we got into the work and reflected on what we found, we realized that there are really sort of 3 groups of institutes: those that are established, those that are emerging, and the states that don't have public health institutes. And it turned out that when we really took a hard look at where institutes do exist, that there were a number of states that did not have public health institutes. They might have a combination of organizations that are doing some of the similar things to support governmental public health, but not a public health institute entity. And a big part of our project was thinking about, so if a public health institute doesn't exist, what might you do to try to build a public health institute, and what would that be like? And there's a lot more to learn about that, but we did do an initial site visit to one state and began to have some conversations with key people who might be part of an institute if there were to be one. And we did a series of interviews over 2 days. And one of the things that came out of that was that starting a public health institute in a state might be like merging onto a freeway, because there's always a whole lot of activity going on, and it's not like you can just say, okay, everybody stop, here we are, we're starting a public health institute and we're going to start up again and do things in a new way. It just doesn't really work that way. So that concept, which was one part of the interview with the director of public health in that state, really stuck with us. The other thing is that different people have an image of different organizations, and they might think somebody would be a good leader or somebody else might not be a good leader. And then they had different ideas about, well, maybe I want to be in charge of this, or maybe I could be in charge of this. And there were a couple of people who I would have never thought would think that they would be the home of a public health institute, who stepped up and said, you know, I want to have a meeting when you're here because I think I might want to be the home to that kind of an entity. So there's a lot of issues. There are a lot of issues around image and politics that are going to be involved. And then the other thing is that we found that sometimes people think that running and starting a public health institute might be something you could do as part of another job. And it really is not something that you can do in that way. It is a very hard set of work that is like starting a new small business. And you think about people you may know who start small businesses and how they maybe work out of their homes and they work multiple hours and really work hard to get a business started. I think a public health institute is similar to that. It's something that is pretty intensive, and to really be successful, it's probably not going to be something that you can do on the side with another busy job. As we did the site visits and the telephone interviews, a core set of elements that were common across successful institutes emerged, and they fell into these five areas. And in my mind, these five areas are a little bit of a collapse of the keys to success into a little simpler version that has more detail and more things that you can measure. But having entrepreneurial leadership is very important in an institute. And it's not a traditional managing a business. One of the people that I've worked closely with at one of the institutes said, you know, I've got a whole lot of experience managing federal grants. You give me a big, humongous, complicated federal grant and I can manage it to a T. But you give me the start of a public health institute, and that is a whole different story. Being an entrepreneur and starting up something new is different than being given a set of deliverables and having to figure out how to do them. So that entrepreneurial leadership is important. And then having the right partnerships, the right people around the table that include governmental public health and university partners and others who care about the public's health in general, or who may be important investors or resource magnets for the program. And then those folks, the right people around the table, sharing a vision about where you might go with this kind of entity that tries to support everything that's going on and build stronger public health. And then there is this issue of funding. And we realize that there is a portfolio of core funding and project funding that's needed. And one of the key findings of our research was that many of the public health institutes have millions and millions of dollars of project funding and a very small corpus of core funding or center-directed project funding. And that in order for all of the public health institutes to be sustainable over a long period of time and across sort of challenging financial times, probably a portfolio that includes both core funding and project-specific funding is going to be what's going to be most successful. the thing that we went into the project thinking was going to be the most important, which was strengthening the core competencies related to the organizational competencies and the programmatic competencies, is very important, but turned out to be probably less important and less urgent than some of these other issues that we identified with the leadership and the vision and the partnerships and the money. When we looked across all of the institutes and started thinking about this whole issue of what should we do in order to build stronger, more institutes, we realized that we needed across the board to think about building this entrepreneurial leadership, not just in one institute, but across multiple institutes and down a couple of layers. We also felt like we needed to think about this whole funding issue and to think about what are the kinds of partnerships that might help build both the project and the core funding that's needed. We talked about the importance of building the core competencies, the informatics, the research evaluation, the policy, the communications, and the issues of people not knowing what public health institutes are and trying to think about what are the branding strategies or the proof of concept that might result in a better understanding of what public health institutes are. And one of the things we did first related to that was to look across all the public health institutes that exist and summarize all the work that's been done on obesity. And it was a pretty amazing set of work across programmatic, policy, governmental, research, types of activities, and when you put it all together, it was a really remarkable set of activities. And so that kind of speaks to the opportunity when you look across states at the work, the innovative work that public health institutes have been able to create. The roles of public health institutes, they convene, they develop information assets, and these kinds of things that NNPHI needs to do. You know, there's some things that need to happen at the institute level, then things that need to happen that the national network needs to do to support these organizations. And being able to bring people together to help develop these competencies, to serve as a hub, to promote collaboration, and to do these situations that create some kind of seed and pilot funding. This Robert Wood Johnson is a nice example where the local institutes receive a grant from Robert Wood Johnson that is matched in their state across 2 years to help them get their public health institute started. And there are probably more opportunities like that that NNPHI could do. But there's this need to have this enabling community that helps all of this come together. When we think about the elements of technical assistance, I think we've kind of covered this, but some of the things that we've already begun to do are like we have begun to look at this entrepreneurial leadership and have had an educational session for the emerging institutes. Another piece of that is some work that we're going to be doing just in the next few weeks that is helping to build emotional intelligence among the leaders in the public health institutes. And this has been there's some opportunity for there to also be peer-driven technical assistance. For example, one of the public health institutes already has a whole system for keeping up with and dealing with some of the basic infrastructure of managing public health institutes, and two of the emerging institutes have gone there, learned their system, and are implementing it. And then there's the whole issue of continuing to foster the emerging institutes with the relationship-based mentoring and the multi-state collaboratives. So that's kind of what public health institutes are, what the national network is, how we took the original keys to success and used them to create a study that helped us look at where all the public health institutes are and to think about what needs to happen next. And now we have the opportunity to hear two stories from the field, from Michigan and from Florida, that would help us relate to the sort of the real world of what's it like when you're kind of thinking about these things at the local level.
Thank you, Sarah and Aaron, and my boss, Jeff Taylor, for allowing me to do this today.
Let me make sure I know how to click here. Oh, backwards. Oh, did I advance forward? Did you guys load the slides in?
Yeah.
You did? Okay. Are they at the end? Okay. Let me see if I can remember these slides.
Wow. Do you want to go first, possibly, and maybe we can switch and I can take a peek at my slides? Okay. The Michigan Public Health Institute started in 1989, and it is jointly governed with the Michigan Department of Public Health. It was under Public Health 264. And the need to develop a public health institute really helped the Michigan Department of Community Health, which is what it's called now, to do a lot of health policy, research, survey analysis, education, and training. And we're still a help to the department. Unfortunately, we rely on them 75% of the time for our funding base. But it is beneficial for the State Department because when there are oftentimes when there's economic deficits and a lot of constraints, they look to us to help when there's times of hiring freezes or when there's immediate project needs coming from a federal level, even from a state level when there are mandates. Let me see here. MPHI's charge pretty much is to promote health,
prevent disease, and enhance the quality of life through an organized program of policy, development, planning, scientific research, service demonstration, education, and training. And our mission is to maximize positive health conditions in populations and communities through collaboration, scientific inquiry, and applied expertise. So everything that has already been shared before, it's definitely something that we're practicing. Currently, right now, we started off with Jeff Taylor, Dr. Elaine Bean, which many of you all are familiar with, Cindy Cameron. Both of them have provided a lot of technical assistance to health institutes around the nation. But we started with a core base of like 4 to 5 employees. We've grown since that time to 241 staff. Now, to some larger institutes, that may seem like a small number. But to us, that's pretty large because somehow we've been able to retain staff, but to keep them actively engaged and to excite all of that energy and continue to do research and continue to do policy work and education and training. What that number truly means, though, also is that out of that 241, we have 159 staff that are non-affiliates. So when I use the word affiliates, that's what helps to meet the need of the State Department. When I was talking about the hiring freezes that they may incur, and they're needing us to pretty much go through a hiring process, employ that person, and oftentimes they're staffed right on campus, or sometimes that person is actually staffed at the health department or even at the local health department. So they have the NPHI employee sort of title, but they're an affiliate staff member. So out of the 241, we still have 159 staff members that are non-affiliates. These are individuals that are have master's degrees. Some have doctoral degrees. Some of them don't have any type of advanced degree, but do a lot of survey shop sort of work. So there's varying degrees. We love to have students that come in after completing their master's and they move forward to doing their doctoral work. So there's many different levels. But one of the key things, and I love the fact that actually this slide is up, is because we've actually gone from having a NPHI board that looked like the founding partners of NPHI, and we've truly diversified it. We've now incorporated the health maintenance organizations. We've involved media. We truly have an intersectoral look to our board, including not just diverse, obviously, in ethnicity and gender, but in actually in their profession. Our strategic relationships and diversified funding base, and I'm just going to run through a litany of this. This was all on the slide, but we have 12 divisions of state government or federal government as far as funding agencies, 18 foundations that fund some of our projects, 17 for-profits. We have a couple of Indian tribes within the state of Michigan. And so we have truly grown from something that we've been dependent on state funding to truly diversify. It's not just based on, again, state funding, but we want everything to look diverse because you can't rely on one source. We've been able to leverage these resources in generating $76 million in non-state resources from private and public sources. Just recently, we had our program directors meeting, and it was so exciting to hear. And all the program directors were like, "Really? Are you sure, Tracy?" Tracy Litzinger is our controller, and she said, "Look, guys, we've actually had an increase of 14% of funding since 2007. We've never heard of an increase in funding. We've never even thought of that. But we knew, and we know individually how hard we've worked to diversify our funding, to really even work collaboratively, not just across federal or state." Or even CBOs or FBOs, but even amongst ourselves. When NPHI was created, we had wonderful directors that came in with funding, but we sort of acted as silos, sort of separate business units, where we're trying to move away from that and really work collaboratively across the campus. And this has already shown to be a wonderful return on investment. And then she recently reported that we have a current revenue of $31 million. Cross-cutting partnerships, I highlighted three examples, and there's a wonderful schematic of our core competencies. I definitely want to make sure that everyone here receives it. But just to highlight some of our core competencies, we have health information technology, learning solutions, translational research, consulting and technical assistance, and health promotion education. And, for example, our Michigan Childhood Immunization Registry, something that started off as a statewide initiative on trying to enhance working with hospitals, school systems, Head Starts, any type of entity that would be in charge of making sure a child was immunized, we've worked collaboratively with the state to create a true systematic approach to that and actually have a database where individuals are able to enter in data. And these are individuals not just within MPHI, but all across the state. And so in 2003, it actually received the GROW Award as well as the PROTECT Award for its wonderful work. Our learning solutions, we have a wonderful piece of equipment called MediaSite, which is actually created by Sonic Fundry, and a wonderful example of how much we've been able to impact educating and training the public health workforce in Michigan and even beyond. One of the core projects that I have is working with the State WIC Division. I've been working with them since 97, prior to me even getting to MPHI. And they've been looking to provide some nutrition education as a web-based module. Well, we were trying to figure out ways creatively to kind of educate everyone within the state. But by using this wonderful webcasting equipment that was a lot less costly, we were able to put up a three-hour webcast. It's been broadcasted a couple of times. We actually have it archived, and we've been able to reach over 600 people with this one tool. It's modularized. You're able to go through and hit on the pieces that you need to see. Nurses are able to actually receive nursing contact hours for it. So it's a wonderful tool, and because we've been able to reach so many people, the MediaSite equipment that we have, we actually just received a National Rich Media Award from not just the company, but from other learning solution companies that partnered with them. So again, we're trying to push out education and training, reach a broader audience, but the return on investment is astronomical. We've been able to save the state $250,000 so far, and that those numbers are steadily growing, because when you start thinking about from a state perspective or even from a local public health officer trying to think, how am I going to get my staff to training, you're thinking about the travel, you're thinking about the overnights, but if you can just keep your staff right at their desk and they're able to receive the training live or archived, it's just such a wonderful tool. Translational research, we were funded by, I believe, the Kellogg Foundation for the Institute of Nursing Centers. This was a five-year program that looked at working with nursing management system, or management centers, and just pretty much looking at the quality and access to healthcare for individuals. The funding has just recently ended in August of 2008, but they're looking again to MPHI to institute some more nursing initiatives. Consulting and technical assistance, the National Center for Child Death Review is something that once started as a Michigan Child Health Child Death Review. Because Michigan did such a wonderful job in working with its partners, we were looked to as a model. And so now we're nationally funded. We actually have we're sharing an office in Washington, and Terry Covington oversees that project. The nursing agenda for Michigan, Dr. Elaine Bean is working very closely with Jeanette Klimchek. She's the chief nurse executive for the state of Michigan. And they're looking at, obviously, the nursing shortage within Michigan, but they're also looking at the policies, education, working with community colleges, universities, several different aspects of nursing, so that the barriers are no longer there, so we can really figure out a way to grow the nursing workforce. And there are many other states that are looking to Michigan as a model for that. Berrien County Cervical and Breast Cancer Screening is actually one of the projects I work on. I'm working with them on doing PR work for their social marketing campaign. They have, unfortunately, very low rates of African-American women that are seeking breast and cervical cancer screening, and so just a couple of weeks ago, they've asked me to design their billboards. And so by putting our name out there and also partnering with Berrien County Health Department, the Michigan Department of Community Health, Office of Minority Health, the name is getting out there. You know, you just can't contain the expertise, but it's okay to market yourselves. I know that we're nonprofits, but it's okay to talk good about yourself. And when you add that human aspect to whatever story it is, that hits home. That hits to the media, that hits to your consumers, that hits to your partners. And know that your partners don't always have to have the dollars, but they have to be a key stakeholder in that whole circle. Because if they see the value, other people are going to see the value. And that's, I mean, there's a lot of competition with funding, as we all know, on a federal level, statewide level. Funding is not there. So the more collaboratively that you can work and decide on who actually has the organization to become the fiduciary and make that decision, put it on paper, everyone is pretty safe. But it's all about collaboration. Just one last key point is that part of our strategic planning process, and looking at all of these things that have progressively been happening, we've pretty much wanted to highlight our core competencies, and that's the document that I definitely want you all to have. But I am in charge of the grantsmanship curriculum for staff. Oftentimes, we hire these wonderful people to come in. They have wonderful expertise in research, but we're also asking them to have some type of entrepreneurial leadership or grant writing skills. Not all of them do. And so part of my job is to make sure that they understand how to assess a grant opportunity, even how to write it, even how to review it, because I think even as a reviewer, you're able to think objectively as you write something, what are some of the key components that you need to place in there? Who are the key players that need to be a part of this grant opportunity? So that's part of the efforts that we're doing. I'm also in charge of the marketing plan. I have a wonderful promotion team that I'm working with on campus, and I'm in the final stages of finishing up the draft of the marketing plan. Also, we've incorporated redesigning our website. We're in the midst of doing that. Dr. Cindy Cameron is working on that. She's leading up those efforts. We've been able to share a lot of our results with the board at a May 2008 board retreat. And one of the exciting things that we're working on right now, and this is being led up by Jeff Weil, who oversees our Health Information Technology Department, known as Interactive Solutions Group, we're working on corporate partnership building. And again, we're looking at partners not just for the dollars, but also key stakeholders that have a stake in what decisions, policies, programs that are being put forth. So I think that's Michigan in a but are there any quick questions or nothing? Yes.
Yeah. Do you run into any kind of issues where people think that the services, the staff that are working in your organization should actually be state employees or no state benefits?
It's rare. It's rare. I think most people view MPHI as a helper, as a convener, as opposed to a threat. And I would say that more from the perspective of the state looking at us, but if you were to say another company that we're in direct competition with, they would obviously want to stir up something like that. But those are it's the Alterums, it's the Research Triangle, it's the Schools of Public Health. Those are the people that we're trying to partner more with. I think that we've, over a series of probably the last 5 years, we're doing more collaboration with the Schools of Public Health, which is important. But we do, you know, and we're attractive because our indirect is a lot less. It's sometimes even half of, say, like a U of M School of Public Health. So a lot of the partnerships, there's a lot of negotiation that happens with that, but we try to make them our friend as opposed to our adversary.
Well, particularly that governmental public health folks.
Yeah.
And I've seen this, as they're reducing and
yes.
economic climate, you're growing, and maybe assuming some of those same functions. So there's a perception out there that you're taking
a threat. And that's one of the reasons why we partner a lot with the State Department. If we're able to actually become the fiduciary of projects and it actually helps to fund some of their project work, even if we employ them, that still enhances their capacity, I mean, in the whole grand scheme of it. And I think that's why it's important to have a Jean Chabu that sits on your board. I mean, MDCH is one of our founders. And so, you know, in some areas, possibly that happens, but I'm actually the one director that still does the majority of the work with still the State Department in terms of dollars as well as the number of projects. So 98% of my project funding is all the state, and I have a wonderful relationship with them. They appreciate that we're not under a hiring freeze, that even though they're suffering a lot of deficits in funding and staffing structure, they know that they can rely on MPHI to kind of help in that regard. So it's good right now, but we're struggling too. So it's good to keep and foster those good relationships when you can. Thank you.
Well, as Karen said, I'm Rolf Fox. I'm director of the Florida Public Health Institute. I want to recognize two people. Gene Malecki, who's chair of my board and health officer of Palm Beach County, is here today, and glad to have Gene and her support. And Deborah Kerr, who's the deputy for my institute. We wouldn't be where we are without either one of these folks, so I want to acknowledge their support. We had, I think, a kind of a fortuitous set of events that in some ways caused our institute to come into being. Jean and several other people were appointed to an advisory committee by Secretary of Health several years ago to put together a public health institute on 140 acres of land in Palm Beach County. That also was the site for one of the remaining tuberculosis hospitals in the country and the only TB facility in Florida. That advisory committee underwent some changes with changes in gubernatorial leadership, and I joined the advisory committee meeting in part for one of the members who was University of Miami back a couple of years ago, and we decided at that point to bifurcate the 501c3 for the institute away from the campus development, because we were concerned at the time that the campus development, for a variety of political reasons, might stall. There was a Miami-Dade Public Health Institute that had been in place for some time. The folks in Miami-Dade County graciously offered us their corporate vehicle. They had $600 in their bank account, and they kept that. But they did give us a corporation. The Palm Beach County Health Department, several years ago, had established a Brumback Fund for Gene's predecessor, and that money had been held in escrow by the University of Miami. Was almost the amount we needed for the match for the NNPHI Emerging Institutes grant. So we got agreement for the match to be provided through the Brumback Fund. We've made an application for the Emerging Institutes grant, and we were successful. And I want to say Michigan actually is our mentor institute, and it's been a great relationship. We've really enjoyed working with all their staff. We started out with a board of five individuals. It was actually the individuals that were on this original advisory group that had been appointed by the previous secretary. We have over time taken a number of deliberate steps and thinking about some core elements of a successful institute. One that I'm going to mention in a minute is, I think, to really have a diverse board. And we started out with pretty much a South Florida board. We went from 5 to 13 members in the last year. We have state, we have the secretary, the Surgeon General in Florida has a designee on the board. We have public health representatives from the Panhandle, Northern, Central, and Southern Florida. We have three universities. We have an ex-legislator. We have Vice President Merrill Lynch. We have, I think, a very, very interesting and I think fairly diverse board, and beginning to, I believe, develop the reputation of being a statewide institute and not necessarily being confined to South Florida. We were fortunate right after the Emerging Institutes grant to put in a grant request to the Quantum Foundation, which is a local conversion foundation. And pretty much, I guess it was a month or two after we got the NNPHI grant, we were awarded $1,050,000 from the Quantum Foundation. And I want to say one of the other elements of a successful institute, I think, is that core funding. And I understand Michigan was fortunate at the beginning to have Kellogg funding that acted in many ways, I think, like the Quantum funding has supported us, which really has allowed us. I mean, we do have project deliverables like we do with an NPHI, but many of our deliverables are qualitative, not quantitative, and I think it gives us a little more flexibility to develop kind of at our own speed. We have been fortunate since then to get additional funding from Quantum. We are now funded also by the Palm Healthcare Foundation. We, as I said, had UM funding. We've had a project through NNPHI from CDC on biopreparedness, and we've been funded by the Florida Center on Nursing for some activities. So we've been up and running now for, I guess, about 18 months. Our annual budget, I think, is somewhere in the neighborhood of $500,000-$600,000. We're not quite where Michigan is. We have three full-time employees and eight people that work on contract. They're not all working full-time, but we have eight other individuals that work with us in various capacities. We have organized into four centers, and the nice thing about being a 501c3, and this is from someone that spent the last 35 years in government, is that we can kind of build this thing the way we want. And we have right now a center on workforce, we have a center on primary care and prevention, we have a center on education and training, we have a center on bio-preparedness, and I was going to block on that. We're thinking about adding a new center now. We're contemplating a project in water, we're thinking about a way to put our stake in the ground on safe water. But the nice thing about it is that we have the ability to morph over time in ways that I think will make us much more functional. I want to just quickly mention a few of the things we're involved with, and then some additional core elements that I think are essential for a successful public health institute. Through our Center of Education, we were able to get 8 universities to come together and teach one course for 3 credit hours and for nursing education units on-site at the TB Hospital. This year, we're going to be a little bit more ambitious, and we're going to attempt to do 5 simultaneous sites across the state with 10 days of instruction, the mornings in didactic and the afternoon in field training, and each one of them. Now we have 9 universities this go-round. And the idea is to begin to provide kind of a taste tester for people to interest them in a career in public health. And we had a really good, although the first go-round we did it in kind of a short time frame, we've had really good reviews on this course, and the State Health Department has now agreed to join with us and provide some distance-based sites. We have an academic advisory committee, so we're going to be moving forward on that. I was interested in your comments around training. One of the things that we see for our institute is a role in training public health professionals, and we're trying to move forward with building an infrastructure to do that. We also see the opportunity to work with other institutes in other states to do a cross-state training program that would build a library of activities that different states have developed, and then look at providing dollars to do curriculum development where there are gaps. We did a CDC biopreparedness project where we had the phone call with the NNPHI folks, and we had somebody on our staff that we'd been playing around with some concept papers, and so we shot NNPHI a concept paper, I think, the next day, and were able to work with 2 other public health institutes around this biopreparedness project. And that's, I think, an example of a project that would not have been possible without NNPHI playing the kind of coordination role, and also being able to bring a potential grant to a public health institute in something we would not have probably known anything about. We have a variety of other activities. I mentioned the water project. We're going to be funded in the next month or so for an oral health coalition and a set of oral health activities looking at Medicaid and SCHIP in the state of Florida. We're funded by Palm Healthcare Foundation to develop a staffing metric for public health nurses, and we're working with Dr. Malicki and her staff and with the state of Alabama to try to put that together. One of the things that I wanted to mention as far as successful institutes, I think the first I would say would be relationships. It's location, 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 and I think in this it's relationships. And I think that the kind of relationships that we were fortunate to start out with, and I think Jean and her role in Palm Beach County Health Department, there are a number of other people who from the very start were supportive of this institute, and I think they've allowed us to begin to develop a credibility that we would have been really, really difficult in a difficult time doing our own and over a much longer time frame. I think the second is persistence. I can't really say that too loudly since I've only been at this for a year and a half. I think we've done okay, but I think just continuing to try to look for sources of funding and look for projects and trying to kind of look for ways we can work with academia and with governmental public health. I've mentioned the core funding. I think that's essential. We were really fortunate. This foundation president, I had been bending his ear for months about this before I knew he was going to be the foundation president. And then one day I said, okay, he's head of the foundation. And he literally came to us and said, I'd like to give you all $1 million. And I said, okay, we can do that. And we've actually gotten two of supplemental grants from them since then. So, and they have actually, the first donor meeting that they had in Palm Beach County from foundations all over the state, they showcased to us to a variety of other institutes. And our last grant, our last oral health grant, the VP at the foundation actually approached the other foundations and said, this is a project y'all really ought to fund. And before we have even approached them or put in an application, had already kind of done the legwork for us and try to get some additional. We'll see. Hopefully we'll get the funding. We don't know yet. But they've just been a real cheerleader for us, and I think it's been something that's really taken us to a new level. I think the other thing that I would say as a core element is to be broad-based. And as I said, we could use, I think, some additional private representatives from the business community. This guy from Merrill Lynch just happens to be involved in renewable energy sources, and they work with nonprofits, and just been a great resource. He facilitated a meeting with a major energy company with us last week. Gene was there, and we're hoping that we are going to be able to kind of morph this into an energy water conservation project that will be really unique. But I think having the different talents on the board has really, it really has made a difference. Flexibility. The ability to add and contract, I think that was a point that was made for all of us when we first started. And I think that, you know, there are many public health institutes that are quasi-governmental as Michigan. We chose to be not affiliated with any particular university, although I will tell you, I think my boss, Donna Shalala, still thinks we're UM Institute. We're not, and I'm not going to tell her we're not, but actually, I was hired down by her to start the institute, but I just felt very strong at the beginning that if we were identified with the University of Miami and University of Miami alone, we would not be successful. So we really one other thing I would say would be a core element of success is don't build redundant systems. And I'll give you an example. Because of the feeling that we needed to have an interface with multiple schools and programs of public health in the state, we started looking around about how we could do that. And lo and behold, we found that the Florida Public Health Association had an academic advisory committee made up of all the programs and schools of public health in the state. So I went to the president of that advisory committee, many of y'all probably know, Mary People Sheps, used to be at UNC, and said, you know, would you be our advisory committee as well? And so they agreed. The next meeting they had at the Institute, and I think there are going to be a number of collaboratives going to come out of that. The final thing I would say is I think the really ties, I mean, we're not all about governmental public health, but I think the ties to governmental public health are really crucial. And, you know, we're not where we want to be yet, because I think the state is still trying to kind of fill us out and see, you know, who we are and what we can do. But we have really been working hard at trying to develop relationships with the state and the local health departments and to be there when they see an opportunity for us to work together. And I think there will be some opportunities. We actually had a grant in to develop a nursing course and didn't get funded for it and decided to do it anyway, and went to the state nursing director, and I think she appreciated the fact that we were doing this pro bono. In fact, we were going to fund a little bit of the cost just out of some of our flex money. And so she then turned around and referred us faculty who would do it for pro bono. And we look at this as an opportunity to show the state that we really want to do some things around training, and if we can do a good job with this, that hopefully it'll lead to other type of maybe training contracts, arrangements with the state. So I think there are a lot of opportunities for public health institutes. We're all different. As I said, we've been very fortunate to kind of be where we are. But I just appreciate the opportunity to work with NPHI, and I believe there are going to be other opportunities for institutes to do things together that we would not be able to do on our own. So again, I appreciate the chance to be here today, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Are there any questions? Or anybody? Go ahead.
Yeah, I came in late, so forgive me if this issue was raised earlier, but getting a proclamation or some sort of resolution from your state legislature, if you have received it, and how has it helped you? Has it made it easier to be a sole source contract as a work for the state, which, you know, getting around some of those issues? If you haven't sought that, why not? The relative advantages and disadvantages of having that sort of blessing.
Well, I could. One of the things I didn't mention is there actually were two entities that had been the Secretary of Health that kind of started the advisory committee that resulted in us also started another project up in Jacksonville that I don't think initially was intended to be competitive, but actually ended up being competitive. And they folded and came in with us about 8 months ago, and they actually had they had legislative language that gave them kind of some preferential dealings with the state. We did not, because we got this in at the end of the legislative session, we're not able to get that language through for our institute, although we've already have a House and Senate sponsor on this next legislative session that will start after the first of the year. And so we don't have a proclamation, but we are going after specific legislative language that will really clarify our ability to do business for the state. We just see that as something that, you know, just gives us one more rung on the ladder.
Hope, do you want to say anything about Michigan in this regard? Well, Michigan does have legislation.
We do, and but we still have difficulties with going through the procurement process. I mean, we literally have a master agreement with the Michigan Department of Community Health, but it's posed some issues when we're,
They can legally do sole source contracting. It's just, it just might not always be so easy.
I'll let Jeff answer that one. Yeah, you can get your card and have Jeff talk to you.
And I know in Louisiana there isn't legislation, but there are proclamations in both houses that support the Louisiana Public Health Institute, and that seemed like the way to go for them at the time when they decided to do it. Are there other questions that you have? I really loved hearing from these two folks because it's kind of like the newest, brand new, and the oldest. And there are some similarities and differences. And I loved hearing the sort of the leadership stories and the sort of the breadth and the depth of the work. So I think y'all did a good job of showcasing across the spectrum what it's like to be a public health institute. And I think you did a great job with that. Thank you. Are there other questions that you'd like to pursue? When I was sitting there, I was thinking, I wonder what the people in the room are thinking and what kind of reflections they have or what kind of ideas they have based on hearing about NNPHI and hearing about the study that we did and hearing from these. And I'm wondering if y'all would just be willing to just say a couple of words of what reflections you have or what caught your attention. Maybe even advice you have. I know we have a couple of people. Go ahead.
San Diego's been a huge issue. And what we're looking at
Can you add drought? Because we're having a drought in Georgia.
Increasing the supply of potable water, and I mean it could be for irrigation or other things, but you know we're looking at innovation around energy reduction, increased water production, whether it's desal or something else, and trying to both maybe kind of be a medical model for water in a way, and to pull technologies that are out there now together so that people who, whether they're from another country or another part of the United States, want to look at technologies that exist now, but also beginning to develop a research and development arm to have, you could have a kind of Nobel Prize, and not the prize, but some type of prize, you could compete between the universities for innovative projects that could be done around, again, improving the access to water, the availability of water, or decreasing energy expenditure in the production of water. And there's a lot of issues. I think, what we found is a lot of people kind of mucking around in it, like a lot of Brownian movement, but we haven't really seen anybody from the national level, on the public health side, really kind of what I'm trying to drive a stake in the ground and say, it's not ours alone, but I think there's a real role for us to get engaged in that. Our board voted back several months ago to take this on. And it's kind of been interesting because since then, I've been fascinated by the number of news articles around water. And I never had really paid attention to it before. But I think, that's an issue again where there might be some opportunities to collaborate across institutes. And I really think there's some opportunities for innovation and entrepreneurship, because when we're looking at this, it's like, this is not something the government's necessarily going to fund. This is going to be huge, we think, private interest in this. And there's a lot of economic potential for our communities. And I think that, this 140-acre park that has been through for the last, 5 years, Jim?
Yes.
A series of ideas about what to do with it still has basically come up with nothing. And the idea, we have an iconic water tower in the park. And, the idea would be, if we could almost have a mini scripts around water, that you could begin to develop that property. I mean, this property is right on the interstate in Palm Beach County. So, yes.
I just want to point out next year's theme for that.
We're on the right track.
You're on the right track.
Thank you. Anybody else have something they'd be willing to share in reflection?
Yeah, I'm always willing to share. My name, by the way, is Drew Harris. I'm from New Jersey, and I guess I'm the co-founder of the New Jersey Public Health Institute, which is more aspirational and notional than it is real at this point. But we are incorporated and have a board. And it's been an interesting experience in getting all the various folks together to work on this project. And particularly what following the point that you made, and this is our difficulty, is it a part-time job to create a public health institute? And the reality is, it's a chicken and egg thing, because essentially my partner and I are putting in our dollars to kind of get things going, because it's hard to get grants for things that don't exist, but they don't exist unless you have the grants. It's hard to work on the project and give it all your time if you have to also make a living and support the family. So you try to do it within the organizations you are, try to carve out time, and that's where we have been at this point. But it is very difficult to find that time, and at some point you have to find a very dedicated volunteer who's willing to take it on. And someone like me has to say, I have to let it go, thing is going to be large enough to support me at some point, or is it something that I let somebody else take to the next level? So I don't know.
That's helpful. That's helpful.
Well, I would say, Karen, I mean, I went to Miami. I was on 51% time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I stole Deborah from Dr. Galecki. But Dr. Galecki basically offered me three staff members, to write grants for us.
Right.
And just sit there and we weren't doing NIH grants, mm-hmm. but, you know, we were doing local foundations. And that built me to have, you know, I mean, I've run all sorts of things, but I've never really written much of a grant. And, you know, and to have the ability to have somebody work and do that, and then, you know, we get the money, we kind of gradually add to our staff as we had funding. But it is a little chicken and egg. But I think that, you know, the University of Miami basically, on, you know, my initial salary, said, we'll pay you for a year. And after that, buddy, you're on your own. And so luckily, we brought in enough, you know, money to do that. But I think, you know, at least they were willing to give a year of support.
Well, that was a generous start.
Yeah. So, I think, you know, you need some help from somewhere, whether it's institutional, you know, somebody can help write grants, or somebody can, you know, kind of front end load your funding, and maybe, you know, Joe Kimbrell, who's the CEO of the NPHI, said, you know, it's the first 3 to 5 years are the hardest.
Yeah.
Because you're, I mean, it's like you're on a shoestring, you're kind of living from one grant to the next, and you get to a point, from what I can tell from other institutes, that you finally hopefully get to a point where you have enough core capacity and you have enough business to sustain you. And I think we're really trying to diversify as much as possible. We have two local foundations, you know, CDC. We're trying to work with the state. We're looking at other national foundations. And I think, you know, we're trying as quickly as we can to diversify whatever funding sources, so we're not relying on any one source.
In our research, we found that many of the established institutes have, not all, but many of them have some sort of organizational arrangement that provides support to them. One is housed in a consulting firm that gives them a break on the space, that covers them if they have lulls in their grants so that they don't have to use a line of credit. You know, that is worth something for them. Several of the institutes are in universities and have, like, a lot of times there are people in universities that can provide support and do things that are very meaningful to the starting of a new organization, but it isn't a real big investment from the university. It's not a big loss. So,
well, that's an interesting parallel to the world of biotech or any kind of a startup company, because when you get some of that support, are there strings attached to it, and do you, every entrepreneur will know, do you sell your soul to get that initial financing, and then you wind up without the control that you're seeking? Because, you know, we think that there's these huge vacuums out there like space, but it's filled with dark matter. There's a lot of folks out there saying, well, we're already doing all the things that you're going to do, and how are you going to do it differently, and are you going to replace us in that situation? And if you are, maybe we should control you. And
yeah.
You'll just do a better job of what we were supposed to be doing all along. And so that's always a question of control of the institute. And in public health, that means that people who are thinking themselves strictly as public health people, not the broader boards that you're describing of the business community and folks who are not your typical public health.
Well, I think you're getting us back to sort of one of the foundations of this conversation, and we can make this a kind of the closing point, and that is those issues of leadership and vision and having the right people at the table and the kind of partnerships. It is a very complex and delicate set of activities that require a certain type of leadership in order to maneuver both the resources and the people and the projects to make this happen successfully. And when you look at it that way, it's kind of amazing that we have 28 who have sprung up given the challenges that exist in making this happen. And now we're thinking about how could we help there be more in other states, and there's a lot of complexity in each situation. So I want to thank you for being here and being present, and everybody, and Sarah Gillen, who's the director of NNPHI, and Aaron for kind of putting this session together. Thank you very much.
Yeah. that thing makes sense. That's how we do the Public Health Institute.
Right.
And they said, well, you need to be four because we have parallel missions. And I explained to them, you know, that we're not going to have a system of parallel health. And I think they're
confused. Yeah.
So the irony is, of the whole thing is, I went off and I'm in the leadership program. And we teach collaborative leadership using the training point model.
Yeah.
$3 juice and $4. It's like just my beverages alone are eat up my little bit of
what did you want me to eat?
I didn't realize we were in the exact same spot either.
Find our
you want to try to reload it, sir?